This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last night, the Vermont State Police Fair and Impartial Policing Committee held a public hearing. They were releasing the results of 5 years of traffic stop data that was broken down by race. The VSP enlisted researchers at Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice to analyze the results. What they found was that state troopers pull over black drivers at a higher rate than their percentage of the general population in Vermont. Drivers of other races were stopped at equal or below their population percentage. The analysis also tried to take a look at not just population percentages, but driving percentages, so how many people of a given race are actually on the roads. Today on the show, we're going to take a look at the results and analysis, too. We'll talk about how the data is reported and compiled, what it shows about different barracks and maybe even particular troopers, and what the state police and others think need to be done now that the results are out. Jack McDevitt is director of Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice, and he joins us today. Jack, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's good to be on your show.
And Captain Ingrid Jonas is director of Vermont State Police's Fair and Impartial Policing and Community Affairs. Captain Jonas, nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Can I ask you first, Captain Jonas, how the data is actually reported by troopers? You know, how you're getting the data on race in traffic stops?
Yes. So on the back of the citation or ticket that's issued after the trooper has written the citation, the trooper has a choice of five racial ethnic groups to choose from, and they choose based on what their perception of the driver is. And it's the same for the warning.
So this is basically just what the trooper perceives as the race of the person that he or she has stopped. There's no question in the ticketing process. You don't ask the person who stopped, tell me what race you are, and put that on the ticket.
That's correct.
Okay. And so that then is compiled. And what we're looking at in this report is 5 years worth of that data from every single trooper who's been on the road?
Yes, for the troopers who write tickets. And, of course, not all troopers are patrol officers. But troopers who write tickets are required to fill out this data.
And, Jack McDevitt, what would you say is the biggest takeaway that you gleaned from this 5 or 5.5 years worth of information?
Well, with my colleague, Janice Uwama, we looked at 280,000 traffic stops that were conducted by the Vermont State Police over that period. And we saw some disparities. As you noted, we compared it to an estimate of the driving population. And we did find some disparities this is all part of a bigger process. You know, one thing to say in the beginning is that most police agencies don't do this. Most law enforcement agencies don't collect this data. Some that collect it don't even analyze it. And so this is puts the Vermont State Police in a unique position or among a few elite agencies to be able to be looking at this. That said, we did find some places where there were more folks of color stopped, searched, and cited than we would have predicted with the estimate of the driving population. So that then says to the Vermont State Police and to the captain, to Captain Jonas, that this is a place where you want to drill down and do some further investigation to identify if you have a case of institutional bias, explicit bias, or implicit bias.
Let's talk about we can look at both the population estimates and what you're considering the driving population estimates. So when we look at just population estimates, comparing white drivers and non-white drivers and the rates of traffic stops, what was found?
Well, we found that there were about twice as many African-American drivers based on that number. But that isn't a really good number because you automatically exclude, you know, people who don't live in the state but who are still driving on the roads. So it's not a real accurate estimate. What we used was an estimate that's been used across the country in other jurisdictions, which is people who are in traffic accidents in the state. And that tends to, the research shows, that tends to more accurately reflect who drives on your roads than just the census population.
Well, I want wanted to ask you about that, Jack, because when I was looking at the charts, and first of all, it was a little bit unclear to me how you calculate driving population estimates. So can you tell me how you get that estimate? Because as you said, it's not just census data on how many people are in the state. You're looking at other things as well.
Right. So what we're looking at, and I don't want to get too technical, but what we're looking at is traffic accidents. So we say, okay, who has traffic accidents in the state? Maybe a predictor. And again, as I say, this has been done in other jurisdictions. But you don't just look at all traffic accidents because, as we know, there are some folks who are more likely to have accidents. So young people are more likely to have accidents. People who just recently got their license are more likely to have accidents. So we look at accidents, but we look at not-at-fault drivers. So the driver who wasn't at fault in the accident. And that seems to be, and that's been validated in a few studies as a better representation of who's driving on the roads.
And again, I'm with you. I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, but in looking at the tables in the that are being presented, and I want to tell people also, if you're interested in seeing this as we talk about it, you can go to vpr.net, click on today's Vermont edition. We have a link to the full report, so you can see all of the tables, all of the graphs that we're talking about, and we will, of course, explain things as well for people who are not in front of a computer and not able to look. But, Jack, when you look at these driving population estimates, they don't equal 100% because you say right out there in the table, they don't add up to 100% due to missing data. But we're talking about percentages of people of other races other than white, as identified by troopers, that are so small. It seems to me this is all within the margin of error if you don't even have an accurate assessment of driving population.
They're very small differences, and that's important to make that note. But as you probably saw in the meeting last night, one of the things that's really important to the community members who have been on this fair and impartial policing committee working with the state police and, you know, the people who came to the meeting is that they believe that there is disparate enforcement practices. And what we've been able to do is to say, here are some places where you would look to see if, in fact, these are disparate. And so, you know, this is a pointer for the Vermont State Police to be able to drill down, and as you said in your opening, to individual troopers and to individual barracks where some of these disparities are quite much higher than in others.
We're looking today at traffic stop data from the Vermont State Police. It's 5 years, more than 5 years worth of data, and it's broken down by race. It's also broken down by gender. Listeners, let us know what you're hearing in this conversation, what questions you have, and what you think might be helpful in moving this forward and in looking at fair and impartial policing and implicit bias. Again, you can also see the report itself. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. While you're there, you can post your note or you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. A couple of stats to get out here. When we look at that driving population estimate, so African-American driving population estimate in Vermont is 1%, but it's 2% of the traffic stops overall by the Vermont State Police. For Asian drivers, the driving population estimate is 1%. Traffic stops are 1.3%. For Hispanic or Latino driving population estimates, it's 0.5%, but traffic stops are 0.9%, so almost 1%. For Native Americans, the driving population estimate is 0.1%, and that's also what the traffic stops represent. So then for white residents, driving population estimate 85%. 94% of the traffic stops. Again, driving population estimates don't add up to 100%, so there are some disparities there.
Right.
Captain Jonas, what do you think? What's your takeaway overall from what you're getting from this compilation of the results?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that this is one piece of a larger effort that we're doing in the state police to examine and ensure that we have fair and impartial policing practices for real, not just to talk about it, not just to have an event where we announce numbers, but to really be engaged in a process. And this process actually started a long time ago. So, you know, over a decade ago, we stood up a fair and impartial policing committee, which is leaders in Vermont State Police and also retired members of the department, community leaders, activists, educators, and just everyday citizens from Vermont who want to talk about real issues. And the data collection process came out of that. Data collection is just one piece of a bigger picture of ensuring fair and impartial policing. It's a way to take a pulse on your agency and see how you're doing. So when I see these numbers, I see that we need to acknowledge this, we need to be held accountable for it, and we need to work on it. We need to drill down, figure out what it means, and then come up with an effective response to it.
So you said one of the things that you're trying to determine is there a problem? Does the state police have a problem with bias, implicit bias? Do you think it does, given the data?
I think we can't deny that we have some things to look at here. You know, I'm realistic. I know that human beings have biases. So I don't know why I would ever delude myself to think that human beings within the Vermont State Police wouldn't have biases that need to be challenged. The issue is that if all human beings have biases, police officers have that added level of responsibility to not make law enforcement decisions based on our biases. So we really have an added level of responsibility to look at ourselves because of the huge responsibility that society has given us. But I'm not surprised because we're human, but I know that we need to look at this and do better.
Jack McDevitt, what do you think?
Well, I think that one of the things, and I think that the state police have to be commended for taking this seriously. And I think last night at the community meeting, we had the commissioner and the colonel and the captain, everyone sort of saying, okay, we're going to take this to the next step. Now, let me explain to you why a disparity may not be discrimination. I had done some work in North Carolina with the state police there, and there they were identifying one state police trooper who had stopped a large number of African Americans. And so they said, oh, well, we have somebody here who has bias. But it turned out he was working a small stretch of a particular highway where it was almost four or five African-American bars. They weren't exclusively African-American, but that was primarily who went there. So, and he was doing enforcement of DUIs. So he was pulling over people from that section, and it turned out that it looked like it was biased, but he was really, you know, patrolling that. And there was another trooper patrolling a white section that was pulling over much more white people for DUI. So that's why I say you've got to drill down and understand how this is there an explanation for this that makes sense? And if there isn't an explanation, then you go to the next step of training, like the captain said, that they've already started, and then, you know, it's something that you always have to keep continuing.
Well, and Captain Jonas, we should say it's not included in the report that's been released to the public now, but you will actually be able to see, you personally will be able to see individual troopers and what their results tell you about traffic stops and race.
That's correct.
And so how do you plan to use that?
Well, you know, I don't have the plan in place yet, but we need to come up with a meaningful way to have a look at troopers whose data does include large disparities and compare them to, you know, other troopers and try to find out what this means.
Give you an example from another agency in Massachusetts. The state police did something similar. They identified a small number of troopers who had big disparities, you know, three or four. Interestingly, when they were made aware of it, the troopers' behavior changed. It was really a matter of implicit bias, and they didn't know they were doing it. And when they were made aware of it and the supervisors were made aware of it, they changed their behavior. But in one or two cases, they didn't change. And then the state police had to go to the next level of discipline and eventually fired a trooper. But so that this can work both ways, sometimes just putting people on notice that the way you're doing your job may be affected by biases you don't even know you have. And most people can change at that point.
We're talking there about something like implicit bias, or
right.
you know, where somebody, as you said, Jack, doesn't realize that what they're doing may actually involve some bias on their part, or that they may not have known that they were pulling over drivers of one race more than another. But from this data, we can't assume that that's the case either. There could be explicit bias, and how do you address that, Captain Jonas, within the ranks?
Well, I mean, explicit bias goes against the core values of policing in Vermont. We have strict codes of conduct. We have a very robust disciplinary process. So if something were to be to that extent, I would think it would reveal itself in several ways, not just through the race data that we've collected in the tickets.
That's exactly right. I think in other agencies where we've seen this, once you start to have that conversation, other troopers will sort of say, I'm uncomfortable about this person. She or he seems to act in a way like that might be biased, because they don't want to be caught up in a situation where an officer acts badly and they're their partner or they're responding to the same call. So I think that there is ways to, as Captain said, to, you know, identify who these people are with explicit biases and then try to, through training or discipline or both, deal with them.
We're talking today about the just published results of 5 years' worth of traffic stop data from the Vermont State Police. Listeners, have you looked at the results yet? They show that officers stop black motorists at a higher rate than the general population. Looks like when you incorporate the driving percentage estimates of the population, state troopers do stop Asian and Hispanic drivers as well at a higher rate than what their driving percentage would suggest. We're talking about small numbers here, and so we'll keep that in mind as we look at, you know, what that means when you analyze data. We're also going to be talking with Curtis Reed, Executive Director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity, and we'd love to know what questions you have. We have a couple we'll get to. You can call in with yours, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're looking at the results of 5 years of traffic stop data that's been publicly presented by the Vermont State Police and analyzed by researchers at Northeastern University. You can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition to see the analysis and the lots of charts and graphs that we're referring to today. While you're there, post a question or a reaction, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking with Jack McDevitt, director of Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice, and Captain Ingrid Jonas, director of Vermont State Police's Fair and Impartial Policing and Community Affairs. At the public presentation of the data last night, Mark Hughes of the Montpelier-based organization Justice for All said that he hoped the data would be used to take meaningful steps to address bias.
I think what the community would like to see from a trust and also from a transparency, accountability, and legitimacy perspective is a continuance of this, a consistency of this, and maybe not a analysis paralysis of this data.
We're also joined now by Curtis Reed, Executive Director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity, and we're going to follow on that question of, okay, so what happens next? Curtis, nice to have you back on the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So let me first get your reaction to the data that's been presented and what you think, what story you think it's telling.
Well, I think that there are two stories. The first story is really the story about courageous leadership, conspicuously courageous leadership on the part of state police to not only collect this data, but to make it publicly available. I mean, it's available to any citizen anywhere who has access to the Internet. And that's a really courageous step on their part. The second is, this is just one step in a process that began about a decade ago, and that there is the work they're doing is really intentional. They're making the investment in terms of bringing in Captain Jonas at a level to really take this on in a substantive manner. And then there's a story that this is not only about state police, but we also need sheriff's departments and local police departments to follow the leadership of state police. That's what I'm looking at. the actual data, the numbers that were presented, require further investigation, to drilling down into why we see certain disparities in stops and tickets and citations, et cetera. But we wouldn't know that, and there'd be no possibility of state police to address bias within its ranks without having good, solid data, which they now have.
Curtis, some people might find it surprising that you sound so sanguine about this, because what the data shows is that there are disparities. And yet, you're also saying if we didn't have this data to start with, we wouldn't have a starting place to get better from. And this is good leadership on the part of the state police. But, do you see problems as well, or is this something that you look at and you say, great start?
It is a great start, but it's also recognition that, yes, there are disparities, and we don't want those disparities to be there. But in order for them not to be there, we need to understand how they came about in the first place. And the data providing a roadmap as to where to go and to what sort of questions need to be asked about why disparities are elevated in certain barracks or elevated in terms of certain races or ethnicities, as well as, and the state police has a capacity of drilling the data down to an individual trooper. We might discover that there might be just a handful of troopers who account for the disparate data. And so what are the commonalities that those troopers have? Are they all from the same barracks? Are they all from the same, do they share what? So the commonality do they share, and to be able to address that in a way that is regulated by either training or through some sort of disciplinary action. So I believe we all start off with the idea that there is disparate treatment.
Let's get to some of the questions that our listeners have. Adrian in Moncton wrote in to say, I wanted to ask about the state police data that shows that black drivers are 5 times more likely and Latino drivers are 4 times more likely to be searched at a car stop than white drivers. So this is searched after a stop has happened. Mm-hmm. Adrian says, this is despite the fact that the statistics for instances in which contraband was found during these stops indicate that it was found in 80% of stops of white drivers, 68.5% of stops of black drivers, and a little bit less than that, 64.8% of stops of Latino drivers. So, Jack McDevitt, first of all, is that all accurate, that assessment of stops and then the likelihood of finding contraband, despite the fact that searches are more likely to occur in non-white drivers, contraband is much more likely to be found in the white drivers who are searched. That's all accurate, as according to your assessment of it, Jeff?
Yeah, that is accurate. That's one of the points we made last night and spoke about. Before I get on to that, just let me back up with what Curtis just said. It's really important. For most of the communities in Vermont, they don't know this because they're not collecting data. There are a few that are, but for most of them, they're not collecting any information, so they can't say to their community, we are or aren't, don't have disparities, because they don't know. You can't know unless you start to look for it. But to follow up on your point in the caller's or the emailer's question, yes, the searches are the places across the country where we see the most disparity. It's probably a place that's impacted by implicit bias the most. And we did see in Vermont two things. One is Vermont State Police search many fewer people than other state police agencies, and they find more contraband. And so in the larger point, it's a good story. But the fact is that they search more people of color and don't find anything, and that leads to some bad faith and lack of trust between the community of color and the police.
Yeah, I want to get your take on this, Captain Jonas, and I'll add in David's comment. He writes, it's my understanding that in traffic stops, African Americans are searched 5 times as often as whites, and the arrest rate, even with that disparity, is more for whites than for African Americans. So again, if you're finding more contraband in white drivers' cars, you're probably more likely to arrest the white drivers in traffic stops where you've done a search and found that contraband. But so what about this idea that searches are more likely to occur in the people who are less likely to have the contraband in their cars, by statistically speaking?
Yeah, Well, it's that was another one of the top points that I came away with from this report. It's certainly concerning. Although I guess I'm relieved to know that when we do very few searches, and when we search, we tend to be, you know, 70 to 80% successful. It is certainly concerning that we are searching one segment of the population more so than others, and being less successful in those searches.
Yeah. And if I can interject here.
Sure, Curtis.
There is, we have baseline data now, which we didn't have before, so that, communities of color can measure performance, on a year-to-year basis now, because we have good baseline data. There's some criticism of why didn't, we release data in year one. Well, we did release data in year one, but the sample size of racial minorities was so small as to not be able to provide any sort of definitive analysis. Well, now with 5 years' worth of data, we have a solid baseline from which to move. Everyone saw the data yesterday for the first time, and so we're just all wrapping our heads around, okay, so where do we go from here? So but I'm entirely encouraged by the process that is in place to be able to do that examination and corrective actions as is necessary.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Newport. Hi, John. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. As a former police officer, I think that this is a waste of time. I think that when people are stopped, they're generally stopped for a traffic violation. And then if they act suspicious, then you do something more. But in order to balance things, I don't think you should look at races, whether you're Caucasian, black, or brown, but you should look at is what they're doing at the time. And it's very simple, and we don't have to go through all these surveys and so on to find out what's going on. I think we should leave everything as it is, and that's the best way to handle it.
So, John, let me ask you a question. If what we're looking at here shows that there's a higher percentage of people who are African-American who are stopped than their population percentage or their driving population, are you suggesting that you think they're more likely to be doing something wrong and that's why they're stopped?
Well, that's generally the reason the police officer has to search the vehicle. If he suspects something, then that happens. But the person has to do something prior to that, which is a traffic violation, before that occurs. And in my opinion, it's a waste of time to say, well, we're searching more black or we're searching more brown or whatever. That's the way it falls, and that's the way it should be left.
John, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. I want to hear, Captain Jonas, your response to that, because you're in charge of looking at fair and impartial policing. And so, you know, one of the questions that this gets at is, I think where John is going is maybe people of certain races have more likelihood of committing violations, moving violations. That seems to be, you know, where some people go with this conversation. And I don't want to put words in John's mouth, but he's saying if this is what the race data shows, it's not necessarily about bias. So how do you address that?
Well, I mean... the fact is that across this country, we are engaged in a huge dialogue, and there's a widespread perception, and then there's data to show disparities, that police are routinely guilty of bias in how we treat racial minorities. And the data is a way for us to try to get our arms around this and take a pulse, as I said. And as Curtis said, I think it's a good point. It helps us create a starting point in terms of a baseline for numbers. But, you know, the concept that the caller talked about, you know, acting suspiciously, bias can impact what a person in a position of authority can determine as acting suspiciously. So what, you know, your bias can influence what you think is suspicious behavior. That could be a problem, so I appreciate the call.
And just one other point, I appreciate John's service. It's wonderful. Policing is a noble profession. but I have to disagree with his comment. The data shows that more non-whites were searched with nothing on them and found to have nothing on them. So that means that the suspicions that he has were inaccurate with certain groups of people. And so, you know, I think we have to sort of understand what the impact is on our society. And I think, as Captain Jonas said, it's important for police to continue to strive to treat everyone fairly.
Curtis, you want to jump in on that, too?
Jack said it brilliantly.
Well, let's go to some other questions then, too. And one of the questions that I have before we get to more callers is a question actually not of race but of gender, because one of the things, speaking about bias, that we see in the results, and Jack McDevitt, maybe you can talk to this, you know, there's not a lot of conversation about gender in these results. But when you do the breakdown just of female and male in traffic stops, you know, when we look at the population in Vermont, it's just about evenly split. There's 50.7% female, 49.3% male in the population. But in terms of traffic stops, 36% of traffic stops are women who've been stopped, and 63.5% are males. And we don't seem to be having this kind of conversation about bias when it comes to gender. Should we be, Jack?
I think we should. We have some pretty good data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Organization that say that men tend to speed a little bit more than women. We tend to drive a little bit more aggressively. So you may think, you may expect some differences. But I will tell you that one of the things that a lot of agencies have looked for is whether or not police officers are stopping women late at night alone. And, you know, that situation can get out of hand. And so that's another place where this kind of data can start to drill down into, do we have some officers who are doing that, stopping a single woman alone in a car at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it was a discretionary stop.
We're talking today about fair and impartial policing. We're looking at traffic stop data, Vermont State Police over the last 5 years. We're going to talk a little bit now about steps that should be taken next, where we can go with this. We're talking with Jack McDevitt, director of Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice, and Captain Ingrid Jonas, director of the Vermont State Police's Fair and Impartial Policing and Community Affairs. And Curtis Reed, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us with your perspective today. Curtis is executive director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity. Curtis, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition. Today we're looking at a report, an analysis out from the state police and from the Northeastern University Institute on Race and Justice that looks at Vermont State Police traffic stop data over 5 years and breaks it down by race. Just to remind you, this is self-reported by troopers, so it's perceived race. So when troopers stop a driver, that trooper can put on the back of the ticket that they – I assume that they are reporting back to the barracks, not necessarily to the driver, but what that trooper thinks the race of the person who he or she stopped is. And so we're looking at that data. We're looking at what it tells us compared to population estimates and driving population estimates. And we're going to talk a little bit about, okay, so what do we do now that we have this data? If you'd like to share your thoughts, you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also see the whole report there, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Al, calling in from Mendon. Hi, Al. Go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, hi, Jane. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I wasn't going to call in until I heard the gentleman talk about, you know, perceived folks who do bad things, and I thought I better call in on this. I'm black. I live in Mendon, been here for 30 years or so, drive a fairly flashy car and have a big hat, and I've been stopped, not a whole lot, and the officers have been really, really nice, but stopped, in one instance comes to mind in New Haven where I stopped at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and the guy said, I just wanted to take a look at your car. I didn't think about it very much at the time, but subsequently realized that really was spurious, to say the least. And I think about another gentleman who's a friend of mine who also drives a very fancy car, and this is not in Vermont, it's in Long Island, but this is an example of the way the real world works, in that he stopped by police several times in East Hampton. He had a he drives a fancy car, as I said, and has a house out there, and finally just went to the police department to say, hey, I'm Mr. X. I live in East Hampton. I've had property here for 25 years or so, and please tell your people to stop stopping me. So, you know, just a couple of real-life examples. I think the report that got put forth is really, really a great report, and I hope that it's used for really good purposes. The issues are still there.
Al, thanks for your call, and thanks for sharing your personal perspective and what you've experienced. You know, interesting to pair you with that call from John, Al saying, yeah, look what I've experienced. You know, Captain Jonas, any thoughts on that?
Now, you know, we hear of these kinds of instances of people of color being stopped, and these are real lived experiences, and I just think we need to really take that into consideration. It's real life.
Let's go to Roger in St. Johnsbury. Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I hope you don't consider this off topic. I just wanted to broaden the discussion just a little bit and suggest that there is a bias, not on the part of police officers at all, but a bias in Vermont law that actually favors the creation of the so-called speed trap. Vermont has a reputation as the worst state in the country for a speed trap. And just so you know, a speed trap is a situation where the speed limit has been set artificially low for the purpose not of protecting the public or for public safety, but rather for the primary purpose of raising revenue for the local municipality. This situation adversely impacts people of low income who are actually funding at a very substantial rate, a very substantial. Some communities, this is their primary source of revenue. And this is a very unfair situation that is somewhat unique, not completely, but somewhat unique to the state of Vermont. And I think someone needs to pay attention to it.
Roger, thanks for your call. Let me put that quickly to Captain Jonas, because, you know, it is a little bit different than what we're talking about in the sense of an implicit bias. But, you know, Roger is still saying that the state police and other agencies are targeting low-income Vermonters by policies that are more likely to have a larger impact on people with less money. Do you see that?
Gosh, I don't know that I can very articulately comment on that. I know that one of the things that stood out for me last night that was interesting was that we are writing warnings more often than we're writing tickets in the Vermont State Police. I can't speak to other departments. Jack, can you verify what I just said? Or
Yeah, I can. Two things. This would generally be in a jurisdiction, not on the state highways where there's a posted speed limit. It would be a place where the speed limit precipitously drops from like a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit to a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, and then the police pull people over there and they ticket them and they use that as a source of revenue. And that happens across the country, not just in Vermont, generally smaller towns, not generally state police agencies. But what we did find when we did the analysis of the state police is that 60% of the stops result in a warning in Vermont by the state. Stops by the state police result in a warning, and only about 37% result in a citation. And that's an interesting, and it does vary by barracks. So I'm hoping that there'll be a conversation about how that, you know, whether that's the right mix and how that would go, because you can deter people's behavior of speeding with a warning, and then some people, it may take a citation. So how you make that decision is an interesting quandary.
Another call here. Larry is on the line with us from Bethel. Hi, Larry. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The reason I called is I'm a senior citizen. I've driven over a million miles, business and pleasure. And I've been pulled over by the police, you know, a fair amount of time. Not that I'm a reckless driver, but a taillight out, failing to signal. I've had some speeding tickets, but I would say over the years it's proven with the miles I've had that I'm a good driver. My point is that an automobile is not a static object. It's moving generally between 30 and 70 miles an hour. I contend, I don't think an officer knows if the gender of the driver, or the ethnicity of the driver. Now, I have 20/15 vision. When I am driving, I cannot tell you if it's a male or female ahead of me, or if it's a African-American or a Caucasian. I don't know. And I, with my vision, I can't see how someone, any officer, will know this until he's pulled the car over.
Larry, now, let me put that to Jack McDevitt. And you know, and also, I guess we should keep in mind that often troopers are stopped and they're stopping somebody who's coming directly at them, past them. So it's maybe a different viewpoint than what you have behind a car. But to that point, Jack, I mean, you've looked at this. How do officers, you know, when we look at the bias, how do officers know, or how do you think there may be some understanding of an officer before a stop is made of the race or gender of the driver?
Well, I think it is the case that sometimes officers don't know. As you suggest, frequently it's a cruiser that's parked by the side of the road looking at the car. As the car comes to them, they would see that. Or somebody's rolling through a stop sign or something and the officer sees that. So they do, but they don't always. And certainly with radar, they never know who it is that's driving. But one of the things about the report that is interesting is that we saw some disparities on stops, but then we looked at post-stop behavior. And what I mean by that is whether the officer, whether the trooper decides to give a warning or a citation, and whether they decide to search. And at that point, they absolutely know what the perceived race of the driver is. They've pulled the person over, they've taken their license and registration, they've had a brief conversation at the side of the car, and now they're making a determination. And we see disparities at the stop level, but also at the citation level and also at the search level. So it is something that, even if you didn't know when you stopped them, the biases don't go away when you get to the door of the car.
And are you seeing a greater disparity once the stop has been made in what happens among and between different races?
The disparities in Vermont are small across the board, but they are higher for searches and for warnings and citations.
Captain Jonas, you know, this is, as people have pointed out, something that the Vermont State Police has been working on for many years, and this data is 5 years' worth of data. There is a law in Vermont that all police departments are supposed to be collecting data, and it is supposed to become public, and then we can look at how this is done across the state. And, you know, the state police is one of many dozens of law enforcement agencies across the state, so this is important data to know, but it's of somewhat limited value in exposing or illuminating what kinds of bias are going into policing in general across the state of Vermont. Do you see any way for what the state police is doing to influence other departments or to change the way training is done at the police academy where all officers go regardless of what department they're heading to?
Well, I can only speak for our department, but I hope that that other departments will look to us and follow in our lead regarding not just the data collection, but the training and the building trust in the communities that we've started, that we've embarked on. We can lead by example, but we certainly have our work to do as well.
And Jack McDevitt, you mentioned that not every state is doing this, not every police department in every state is doing this. So how does the state police then figure out, you know, there's some things that the state police will want to do regardless of what any other department anywhere in the country is doing. But how do you then figure out, well, where does Vermont fit in the national picture and in policing and in this push to make sure that there is fair and impartial policing across the board in this country?
Well, I think that they've assumed a leadership role, as Captain Jonas said. They've said, we're going to take this issue on, and we're going to do it in a serious way. We're going to look at the data. We're going to do training. We're going to monitor our officers. And hopefully this will model for other agencies in Vermont and elsewhere in New England and across the country that you can do this in a way that isn't going to get the chief or the commissioner fired, that isn't going to, you know, result in the public saying that the police are all racist, but that the public would partner with law enforcement as they're doing here and say, we want to do this together.
So, Captain Jonas, what else do you do now with this? I mean, I know this is new. You're still chewing over the data, but and this position that you're in is also new for you and new for the state police. So what comes next?
Well, I think what comes next is again, building those partnerships and working with the Fair and Impartial Policing committee and looking at what are effective and meaningful next steps. We care about this issue. We're right out in front of it. We take it seriously, and we will account for it. Let's talk in a year and see where things are.
All right, we'll book you now. We're gonna get that scheduled for a year from now.
The deal.
Captain Ingrid Jonas is director of the State Police's Fair and Impartial Policing and Community Affairs. Captain Jonas, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jack McDevitt is director of Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice, which analyzed all of the traffic stop data from the Vermont State Police from 2010 through 2015. Jack, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Jane. It was a very good conversation.
And listeners, if you'd like to see all of the data we've been talking about, again, go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. You can also carry on the conversation we've been having right there. Now, it won't be long before your kids are out of school for the summer. Do you have a plan for how you're going to keep them occupied and cared for while you're at work? How do you afford it? Tomorrow, we'll get tips on how to make summer work for you and for your children. And we'd love to hear your suggestions as well as your struggles. Email them to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Our producers are Rick Singeri and Sam Gale Rosen. We have production assistance today from Haley Labonte Davey. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.